For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
The 0-1 pitch is swung on line to right field. Santana moving back has the room, makes the catch 5 feet in front of the track, and the ball game is over. Sir Anthony Dominguez now 9 for 9 and saves as an Oriole, and the Birds even the series at 1. The final, Baltimore 5 and Boston 3. Orioles lead the season series now 8-4, and the Red Sox likely to fall 4 games behind the third wild card leader.
The Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Called it in, the Red Sox give up a pair of home runs to Cedric Mullins as the Baltimore Orioles take a 5-3 win. And it was a costly one for the Red Sox because the Twins won. And now they are 4 games back in the wild card once again as we get closer and closer to the end of this regular season. We're going to talk with Alex Cora here, I think around 3:15. Whenever he shows up, we'll make the time, obviously, to talk to him as long as we can. And see how they're feeling, see how it's going there in that clubhouse. It seems like there's certainly still some ambition, right? I mean, we heard from Ref Snyder yesterday. They still feel like they've built some momentum. Losing to the Orioles, they could still win this series, and that would be important to win it, obviously. They got the Twins series coming up, I think, in a week. You got the Yankees coming up after this. A lot of division games. It's still mathematically possible, even though I threw up my white flag a long time ago. That was a tough one last night, though, as it seems like the offense, once again, has, gone back into hibernation.
And you jinxed him a little bit. You and Joe Weil. He's talking about the offense.
Joe Weil, let's be honest.
But you continue to sort of be a bit dismissive towards starting pitchers on the opposition. And then when you do that,
generally, that guy Suarez isn't very good. I mean, I think they're missing the two. They're missing Eflin and they're missing, what's-his-face.
He pitched 6 innings. He gave up 1 run. He struck out 8. That looked good to me.
No, he looked good in the game. I'm saying he hasn't had a good year. The Red Sox should have done better against him is my point.
A 3.39 ERA is not bad.
It's not bad. I mean, I didn't say he was bad, but they're missing the two big studs on that rotation.
And he has stepped up, and they didn't step up to the challenge that you set for them. You made it seem like they had an opportunity, and they did not seize the opportunity. And some of the numbers are alarming. Yeah, I was reading Alex Spears' story, mm-hmm. and I think it's 3 runs or fewer in 14 of the last 19 games.
Yeah, brutal.
And they're the best. I mean, they're the worst team in baseball this year in terms of record in those games, runs 3 runs or fewer. So it's not like a style of baseball they're used to playing. They lose when they score 3 or fewer runs, and they've done it basically 3/4 of the time or more in the last, month?
Yeah.
That's not sustainable. And, you know, as Cora said, well, there was one quote. What'd you see from your offense? Not much.
Didn't see much. And Suarez, by the way, his last game was against the White Sox. He got tattooed in that game for 6 runs on 8 hits and 4 1/3. So I thought there was a chance. He had a great month of August. I thought there was a chance he was coming out of that and the Red Sox would have a real opportunity to pounce on him, and they didn't. I mean, they just didn't. There's nothing else you can say.
But the bats are, and it's a weird, and I want to get into this with Cora. Like, how does everybody go into a slump at the same time? It's what he basically said. We all went to a slump at the same time. How does that happen? Especially in this day and age with analytics and spin rates and swing thing paths or whatever the hell they call it,
mm-hmm.
shouldn't there be some technology or ability to pull some of the guys out of it? I'm not saying all of them, but if you have this theory that everybody has gone into, and Raffy's bat has kind of gone soft, right?
Yeah.
Last night he even had a chance to maybe put one on the monster or over them, and it didn't make it. Wah, wah, wah. Like, even his singles, he had 3 hits the other night. He's not exactly crushing the ball. A guy who's known for exit velocity, it's not exactly crushing the ball.
No, it's been tough for him. I mean, it's been a brutal couple of months for him, to be sure. Even Jaren Duran lately, I mean, even in that game where they scored 12 runs, he was 0 for 5. Like, he had a 1 for 5 game just now. And this month of September, I hate to even say it because he's been so strong for them. He's hitting .216 in this month. So, I mean, it's a bad time for all of this. It's a very bad time for it all to be happening, obviously. And it also seems like when the offense is playing well, there's something wrong with the starting pitching. There's something wrong in the bullpen. They just haven't been able to put it all together. And that's hard to do. I mean, it's hard to do for any team all throughout the season and certainly at the end of the year when everyone's sort of running out of gas. But with the Red Sox, since the All-Star break, and they were so good going into it, since the All-Star break, it's just been a constant stream of that. You really haven't seen all three of those things clicking at the same time.
And to win a game, they essentially had to make history.
Yeah.
Second time in the history of the franchise, what did Joe Weil say, the 23rd time in the history of baseball?
Back-to-back, same two players back-to-back twice.
That's kind of why they won that game.
Since Mo Money and Tim Nehring.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they would have won even if they hadn't hit all those home runs, but
right.
Still, you're right. I mean, it's
taking historic efforts to win a game, and then you go back to no momentum. You didn't build on that. Devers didn't build on that. That wasn't him breaking out of a slump, getting three hits. Yeah, I just and you. Good news is you broke the three-way tie,
right,
that you were in at three games back.
Not the way you wanted to.
No, you broke it in the wrong direction, but now you're only tied with one other team. Now there's one other team in front of you, and then the other teams that you're chasing, there's a lot of work to be done in a short period of time.
Yeah, now you have to jump over the Detroit Tigers and the Minnesota Twins if you want that last wild card spot. The Twins occupy it, and the Tigers are now up a game on you. You're tied with the Mariners, and the Tampa Bay Rays are only two games back from where you are. Same with the Rangers are three games back. It's a perilous position that you're in right now. It really can't – you can't keep this side. They've lost seven out of their last 10 games. And it's only you're only going to have this kind of cushion for a while. Like the Twins, they're playing the Angels. They're probably going to start winning. The Tigers have won three in a row. It's playtime's over, okay? Like you missed your window. That doesn't mean you're completely out of it. They got to snap out of this funk that they're in.
And if I'm other teams, Detroit is making a run here.
Yeah, they are.
Over the last, whatever it is, month or so, they've been one of the hotter teams. And if everybody else continues to scuffle, they're going to continue to make up games and chip away at this. And I heard Joe Castiglione talking about that last night. Like, that's an issue for everybody else in this hunt, is that Detroit looks like they're the team with maybe the most momentum.
Yeah, and they're the team with the best starter. I mean, they got the Cy Young favorite, yep, right now going out there every fifth day, and he's a stopper for them. Red Sox don't necessarily have that. They have Tanner Houck, who's been very good this year and has ace-type stuff, I'd say. But for whatever reason, they lose most of his starts. It's just the way it is. Scooble, he goes out there, and there's no mistaking it. He's going out there and shoving basically every 5 days. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Talking Red Sox here. We will be joined by Alex Cora momentarily, but we'll continue with your Patriots calls. Let's go to Doc up in Maine, who has a thought on Pete Carroll of all people. What do you got, Doc?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Congratulations on the job.
Thanks, Doc.
I just want to, when Pete's last year, he went 27-21. In his last year, when he went 8-8, Vinatieri missed a 38-yarder against Pittsburgh late in the fourth quarter, and he missed one in overtime against KC in December, which would have made him 10-6. And he only had one priority in the offseason prior to that season. He wanted to sign Curtis Martin. I think Curtis might have been worth one game. That would have made him 11-5, and that would have made them, the team 30-18 in his three seasons. So maybe possibly the biggest kick Vinatieri ever made were misses.
Yeah, you know, I'll say that's one thing people remember about Adam Vinatieri was those field goals he missed in 1999 that kept the Patriots away from being 10-6 in Pete Carroll's last year. I'd say those.
Well, it wouldn't have been his last year. I think that was his point. Then you would have never had Bill Belichick.
Right. Yeah, I'm saying those
Adam Vinatieri built the dynasty not with the snowball
with his
make.
Misses.
But the misses,
right,
in 99 to bring Bill back to Foxborough to set the butterfly effect,
yes,
in motion.
That's
there.
What he and that's what Vinatieri's known for all this time later, were those
true
misses in 1999.
Forget missing Sisson,
nothing
it was
else,
missing Adam.
Nothing else he ever did. By the way, I know we had this argument before.
Uh-oh.
More accurate postseason kicker? Gostkowski. More accurate than Adam Vinatieri.
I know. It's and true. You can have him if you want him.
I'm just saying.
How about we put
the
your
numbers
life
are
on
what
the,
they are.
How about we put your life on the line and my life on the line? You get Gostkowski, I get Vinatieri. We'll see who's still breathing.
I know who Pete Carroll would take in that.
Who
in
would
that,
you take?
In that thing right there. I think I'd go with the more accurate guy.
Okay.
I might go
you
with
would?
The more accurate guy.
I'll set this up anytime you want.
Okay.
We'll like lay in a guillotine. And if they make the field goal.
Present day. It doesn't. Vinatieri's like 55, isn't he?
He's also jacked.
Getting up there. He's
you
pretty
see
old.
Him?
Yeah.
He's like flexing
he
on
is
people.
Looking, he's looking pretty swole.
You would rather have.
Like RFK Jr. out there.
You would rather have Steve Gostkowski have your life in his foot than Adam Vinatieri?
I might probably take Vinatieri, okay, but I got to say that I think Gostkowski gets way overlooked in these conversations, considering he was more accurate in his career in the playoffs than Adam Vinatieri was.
I do not. I think he is properly rated. He was a good kicker on a great team that got a lot of opportunities to score a lot of points and go to the postseason and do all of that. He was also a bit of a head case.
Gostkowski?
Oh, yeah. He did not have ice in his veins.
Not really.
He had boiling tea.
Not always. 2018.
No, I'm telling you, the dude was nuts.
He was kicking his
dude was nuts.
Fine.
I loved him, but he dealt with some I remember he told me a story once about how he freaked out at halftime and threw his cleat in the garbage because he thought it was a bad cleat.
Oh.
And then realized to go out for the second half, he didn't have another cleat, so he had to dig through the garbage and get his cleat out.
Okay, well, I didn't know that. That changes things a little bit. 617-779-7937. Brandon is in Boston. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hey, how you guys doing? So
what's up,
I think
Brandon?
That the Patriots will be battle-tested against the Seahawks. Seahawks put up 26 to the Patriots 16. I believe the Patriots played very conservative. Seahawks are going to make you work for your points, and you know that Geno Smith can get hot. You look at Tyler Lockett, you got DK right there. You're going against a real running back in Kenneth Walker. Mm-hmm. They went against Zach Moss, who's a running back who is – second to third string at best. So, I mean, you're not going against a guy like Joe Mixon. So he's off that team. He went against a disgruntled Jamar Chase. Joe Burrow, that's coming off of an injury. So you're going to go against a high-packed offense and that can protect the front line. So I don't know how it's going to work out, but I do got the Seahawks beating the Patriots.
All right, thanks for the call, Brandon. Would you take the – in just – in terms of who was there in uniform, so not T. Higgins, obviously, but the Bengals offense as we saw them in week one or the Seahawks offense as we see them now?
Before the game? Like, I don't know what happened.
Going into, like, this week, assuming Higgins doesn't play, let's say it's the exact same roster, exact same inaction.
I might take the Seahawks because
I think I would too.
Bengals looked good. Now, if you just told me coming into the season, would you take Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase?
Over Geno Smith? And
Yeah, I would take Joe Burrow because I'm a big Joe Burrow fan. But have you seen all these conspiracy theories? Now the Dove Kleinman guy in those places, they have this close-up of they think Joe Burrow
not with the water bottle?
Grab it.
I did see that, yes.
So, and I told you.
He was definitely squeezing his wrist.
100%. I mean, no, if I'm a Bengals fan, yeah. I am concerned.
Yeah.
I'm very much concerned. Hell, if I'm a Bengals teammate or whatever, I'm very much concerned. That's the guy right there that's going to carry us to the
ball front. Wasn't sliding out of his hand like a, you know, greased up watermelon like it was last
no,
year.
But
you could tell he was squeezing his wrist. It was uncomfortable for him. Sure.
And there was all this talk. I didn't read all of it, but like he'd be the first guy to ever kind of do this, come back from this injury. It's like a very unique injury and everything. Yeah I wouldn't feel is Brandon a Patriots fan?
Brandon is, I think, a Patriots
fan.
Didn't
sound it in that call.
But he doesn't sound like he's too into the idea of them beating Seattle. And listen, I mean, he's a box score guy. He's into stats and numbers and all that stuff, and that's where he...
So he might be right. Okay.
He's definitely a Celtics fan. I know he's calling. He's definitely a Celtics fan.
But Brandon's a box score numbers guy.
Yes.
Maybe that explains why the Seahawks are a 3+ point favorite at Gillette, because my eyeball, my sort of naive, old-school scouting report says... Patriots deserve a little bit more credit for who they are, what they are, and where they are.
Yeah.
Seattle coming across the country. But maybe the box scores and the numbers and all the analytics are why Vegas is looking at this game differently than I do.
Yeah, certainly could be. We'll get you updated on all of that. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll be joined by the manager of the Red Sox, Alex Cora, right after Brian Frazoco tells you what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Time Out Market. The Boston Red Sox lost to the Baltimore Orioles 5-3 last night at Fenway Park. Cutter Crawford earned the loss, giving up 3 runs on 7 hits over 6 1/3 innings pitched. The rubber match game of this series is tonight on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. First pitch tonight is at 7:10. Nick Pivetta will get the start for Boston, facing off against Baltimore's Dean Kramer. Our coverage will begin at 6:10 with the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show with Joe Weil. Sox currently sit 4 games back of the final wildcard spot in the AL. Patriots are back at practice today as the team gets ready for their Week 2 matchup against the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday. Pats are currently 3-point underdogs heading into the game. 49ers star running back Christian McCaffrey, he missed the team's Monday night win over the Jets due to an Achilles issue. But according to head coach Kyle Shanahan, McCaffrey could have played if it had been a playoff game. I'm Brian Frizzoco, and that's what's trending on WEI and WEI.com. Timeout Market, nestled in the Fenway, is your destination every Sunday in August for Noche Latina. Every Sunday night at 6 p.m., DJ Snacks will spin the hottest Latina beats. Timeout Market is the Fenway's largest salsa and bachata dance party. Don't miss the fun. Visit timeoutmarketboston.com.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Back here, WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcan, Andy Hart. We're live in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and the Freedom of Choice. Shop deals built for you on the New England Edition F-150 official truck of the Red Sox. And we're joined in studio right now by the manager of the Red Sox, Alex Cora, brought to you by Arbella Insurance, here for baseball fans, here for good, and also brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh. Alex, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good. How about you guys?
Doing great. Well. It's good to be here. Good to be talking with you. Yeah. Tough one last night. We just heard you talking about the offense there. It seemed like we got a little tease of what this offense used to look like a couple nights ago. What's been sort of the problem that you've observed, or the main issue that needs to be overcome here with these bats?
Well, there's two things that as a manager, you know, I look into with our offense. The swing and miss in the strike zone. We've been doing that a lot. And this has happened the whole season, right? But the walk rate, when you're striking out, when you're not walking, you're very dependent on getting hits, right? And that's hard to do. You know, the average big league player is hitting, what, 240 now, right? So to get hits at this level is very hard. So when the line is not moving, you know, there's a lot of easy outs. And I think throughout – it started actually – when we started playing Houston, when Houston came here, a lot of swing and miss, no walks, no hard contact, and when you don't do that, the offense is going
to
struggle.
Obviously included in that is Devers. We talked to you last week about him a little bit with the shoulders. He had the three hits the other night. I think some people were like, oh, is that the – like, where is he at maybe in kind of getting to the guy that can carry the lineup?
Getting hits is very important for him, and we know that, but driving the ball to left center is more important. That's where he lives, and it's been a while since he hasn't drived the ball to left center. Feeling better with his shoulders, that's something that he's probably over the hump. But at the same time, you know, the workload management in the cage, you know, like working in your mechanics. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been hitting a lot of balls to the pool side, a lot of ground balls to the pool side. That's not him. He hits a ball in the air to center, to left center. When you see him doing that, then he's locked in.
When you see, and I just saw the lineup, and you were telling us off the air here, Sedan Rafael is in at second base today. Guys like him, guys like Willier Abreu, some of these younger players here, these are meaningful games in September. I mean, you guys are still on the outside looking in, obviously, and you're hoping to play better. But what can you sort of say about that experience for the younger guys in your roster?
It's huge for them. And obviously, we're playing for the present. You know, we're four games back, and we got three against Minnesota. Of course, we have to play better. But this experience is going to make them better for the future. You know, meaningful bats, made a third, less than two outs with the game on the line in September. It means a lot more than made a third, less than two outs than in April. And these kids are part of the solution. You know, they're going to be with us for a long, long time. And I think, you know, performing in September or struggling in September is going to make them better. So that's where we are right now.
For a guy like Rafaela, who I'm assuming maybe long-term is a center fielder, does the experience in the infield, big league, shortstop, second base, I mean, there was even a game where he had to go from center field to shortstop mid-inning and there was a ball hit. It's like, can that benefit him down the road, just be a better all-around player?
100%. I think versatility is something that this game will need. You know, the teams will need to keep improving. And we have the luxury of having a kid that when he plays center field, it's elite. When he plays shortstop, he's really good. And I'm telling you, at second, he's going to be okay. And mental toughness, you know, that this kid, he understands what it means, you know, to win ball games. And he's a huge part of what we're trying to accomplish now. He's a huge part of what we're going to do in the future. And I think right now, if you look at his numbers and you look around the league, and I, you know, obviously, we're looking at his last 15 games. He has struggled. But overall, for a rookie to play 60 games in center field, 60 at second base, finishing the season playing second base, it's been a positive season.
Alex, there's a bunch of your guys, your bullpen guys on the shelf right now, eyeing returns around this time. I think I saw Cam yesterday out there throwing a bullpen. Lucas Sims, Luis Garcia, Hendricks, I think, had a
setback.
There.
Yep.
Setback. Any updates on any of those guys?
There's a good chance Cam Boozer is going to be with us tonight. Lucas Sims is throwing bullpens. Luis Garcia threw a bullpen yesterday. So Mata was in a rehab assignment yesterday. He'll have another one over the weekend. It's always good to finish in the, you know, active. That's very important for the individual. That's very important for the organization. Let's see how it plays out because we got, you know, I think our roster is pretty full right now. So yeah. We'll see what we can do.
Now, you just mentioned Hendricks in the setback, just real quick. Tightness in his last outing in the minors, right?
Yeah, outside the elbow, nothing structural with the surgery. He'll have an MRI just to make sure where we at. Not saying we're going to shut him down, but obviously we run out of time.
You mentioned the importance of finishing active. Trevor Story's back. What have you seen from him since he's returned? And what are you hoping to see over the course of the final stretches of the season?
Just keep getting the at-bats, the repetitions. We love the defense at shortstop, and you see it. You know, he's been able to slow down the game for our infielders. He's making every play. Offensively, obviously, he's behind, just like Tristan. You know, you miss four months of the season. And you come in September, you know, the pitchers are on point. The execution is great. So you're going to battle. But always good to have Trevor in the lineup. Always good having the athlete. And I think these repetitions are going to help him.
I don't know how you can answer this, but what's going on in the American League right now? Why does it seem like everybody's right around 500 in the entire league, the wild card race? It just seems like there's a lot of guys tired. Like, what's going on there?
To be honest with you, I wish I can answer that one. I wish I had the solution 15 days ago because we had a window there to move on. But a lot of teams playing against each other. You saw Kansas City against Minnesota. They swept them after Kansas City lost 7 in a row. So a very consistent inconsistency in the American League, and that's why the window is still there. You know, it's a slim one, but we still got a shot.
What's the temperature of your clubhouse right now in terms of confidence, pressure? Where are they mentally?
I mean, Sunday was tough. Yesterday was tough. I'm a big believer, and this is something Ron Renneke told me when he was our bench coach in 18. Team energy starts with offense. You know, like, yeah, for baseball fans, a 1-0 game is great, right? But when you lose that one as a team, it's kind of like blah, you know. And, you know, Sunday we had a tough one offensively. Then Monday we came out banging. We did an outstanding job. Yesterday it was very blah. And it's not lack of effort or putting pressure. It's like if you're not hitting, where are you going to create energy? It happens in the NFL. It happens in the NBA. So hopefully we can get going offensively and get on a run.
So with this extended slump, do you do anything to try to counteract that negative energy, the drag?
We've done a lot of stuff, showing up early, up late. I mean, like, we tried everything. We tried everything.
Drinks. Or...
Yeah, I mean, like Red Bulls and all that stuff, coffee. Yeah, but so it hasn't worked the last 15 days.
All right, we'll get to the Sherwin-Williams question of the week. This is from Freddie at Top Notch Pro Painting. He asked, Alex, Gerard Mayo just had his first game as head coach of the New England Patriots. What do you remember about your first game managing the Red Sox in 2018?
So, eighth inning, we're up two, bases loaded, triple, we lost a game, and the world was so it was over. This he can't manage. This is not going to work. They're not gonna win a game again. After that, we won 7 in a row. We started the season 18-2, and the rest was history.
All right, very good, Alex Cora. Good luck tonight. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, guys. Good luck.
Thank you. That's Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. We'll talk to him next week, of course, and we'll see. We'll see how much closer or further away they are in that wild card race. It'd be nice to have these last couple of weeks mean something, you know, not just for us as fans, but for the players in the clubhouse and everybody else. And he was talking to us a little bit off the air about the trio of prospects in the minors right now. And listen, I mean, whatever happens this year, you know that there's going to be those, at least two of them, you would think, joining the roster at some point next season. That's got to, for a team that's hesitant to really overspend and invest on free agents and things like that. That's got to be, for someone like him, that's got to feel good.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's part of the reason you and I have had this sort of ongoing debate about whether this team is already a success for this year, and sort of the feel being different with the young players that are here and then the combination of young players that are on the cusp. You're really laying a young foundation there. Now, your hesitancy, I know, is are they going to supplement that with a couple buys?
Right.
A couple, and I think they need to. I think they absolutely need to. But he just brings great energy for a guy whose team is, you know, scuffling a little bit right now. And I love that he admits what anyone who's ever played baseball knows, but sometimes you get baseball hardos that try to convince you otherwise. From the very first time you have a bat, you want to hit. Right? Like when you play Little League, any freaking league up through high, you could be playing great defensively. Your pitchers are great. And if you guys can't hit as a team, or you're in a slump as an individual, it just drags you down.
Yeah.
It sucks the life out of it. And that's the challenge that they're obviously facing. And with those numbers I talked about earlier with Alex Spear, in the last 19 games, when you score three or fewer runs 14 times, and all the guys that are in slumps individually, that's tough to stay positive. But he seems to be at least doing it.
Yeah,
seems his like energy, I find remarkable. The energy, the to steal the Jaylen Brown, it shifted somewhere in early spring training. I thought he had like a little bit of a negative tone that first meeting with the media, yeah. And it was almost like, well, he's resigned to the fact that this is his last year. He'll be a free agent. He's moving on. And then into spring training, I think it built more positive. And then early in the year, and then obviously the extension, and now he's maintaining positivity through whatever this stretch is, whether you want to kind of call this falling apart, fading.
Well, maybe one of those has something to do with the other, you know? Like, maybe it's a little easier to be positive about it and feel good about it and feel good about the next season when, you know, you're locked up for 3 years at a very high price point. You know?
But I think it's more than that. I don't think it's just the contract and the $7 million or whatever. I think some of it is,
I don't think it's all that, but
he looks around the clubhouse.
Probably helps.
I think there's a genuine energy in him that I'm going to be the manager of a young, fun baseball team, not just this year, but next year and the year after. Because the one thing we know, you can question whether they're going to spend.
Mm-hmm.
They can't take away the young players, right? There's no, because if they do that, it means they're trading for stars.
Right.
So one way or the other, he has a team that is going to be competing. Either he likes the young guys and he knows I'm going to have a young, fun team, or maybe they traded a couple of those guys to add a stud arm and a stud bat. Either way, if he's looking at it on paper, he should be optimistic about the baseball team he's going
to
manage.
He should be. And listen, prospects don't always pan out, so it's not like they're all guaranteed to be superstars here.
But if there's four or five of them, there's a good chance two or three of them are good.
Yeah, you would
think so. And that's the beauty of it. It's no longer Marcelo Mayer and just him stand alone.
Right.
Like, it seems like he's actually kind of faded a little bit. You got Roman Anthony, number one. You got Barry Bonds, Christian Campbell. Like, I love that. I've never, can I be honest? Never seen the guy hit.
You love that he's being compared to Barry Bonds?
Yeah. I've never seen him hit. Have you seen him hit? I don't know. Like, I don't, but
Roman Anthony walked in here right now. I wouldn't know who he was.
No, I know, but just the fact that
I haven't watched them yet. I don't know anything. Yeah.
Everyone is openly calling him Barry Bonds. That's a good thing, isn't it?
I would say.
I mean, yeah. What if they were calling him, I don't know, the Panda?
They're going to Pablo Sandoval? Yeah, sure.
Or like, you know, it would change your view of what you think he is.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Bonds, you're like, oh, you mean the guy who was an elite skinny player and then became a power-hitting, like, the greatest baseball player of all time, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, that seems like a pretty good nickname.
Yeah, if they call him Jack Clark, then, you know, you don't necessarily think the same thing.
Scott Cooper. Oh, so he's got a strong arm and nothing else?
617-779-7937 is the phone number. We can continue with your Red Sox phone calls. AJ is in Dover. He has a thought on the Patriots. Go ahead, AJ.
How's it going, guys?
What's up, AJ?
Not too much. Stiz was actually right. I was in the line at McDonald's last week when I called.
Oh, how about that? I'll tell you what. Nothing gets by Stiz. Nothing gets by him. He's the only one who had the Patriots in the knockout pool. He knew you were at McDonald's. Guy's a genius. Anyway, what's on your mind?
Yeah, he's the Stiz of Oz. That's Stiz what I Oz. Told him. The man behind the curtain.
Right.
But I was just wondering. I don't know what do you think about the Seattle secondary? I know they say they want to run the ball, but do you think that the passing game might get going
Yeah, AJ, your phone sucks, so I'm going to drop you there. But, yeah, I think that there's some real vulnerabilities there. Absolutely. I don't think that the Seattle defense is really anything to write home about, period. But in their secondary, I mean, it's a long way away from the Legion of Boom and when they had all those guys out there laying hits and blanket coverage. And really, they held a lot. Like, that was the thing about the Legion of Boom, is they would go out there and hold on every single play and dare them to throw penalty flags. And Sean Hockley was not a ref back then, so he didn't get a flag on every single play like you would today. But, yeah, it's not your grandpa's Seattle Seahawks, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, but my question is on the flip side. I don't know if this pass offense is ready to take advantage of anybody.
Good question.
I mean, they got Devon Witherspoon, who was the guy who everybody loved.
Right, he had that big
third or fourth pick in the draft. He was really high.
They have Tariq Woolen, too, is a solid corner.
Yeah, they're a better secondary than I think you're giving them credit for. And then when I go to the Patriots side of things, I have no idea what to expect from this passing game. From the quarterback straight through, the only thing I feel good about is the tight ends. And we said that coming into the season. You have two veteran tight ends that can be the friend of whoever the quarterback is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Polk, okay, he was open. Great. Now get him the football. Hey, KJ Osborne, when I throw you the football, I'd like you to catch it more than half the time. You know, there's a work-in-progress nature, we know, to this wide receiver course. So, you know, it's one thing if you think there's a matchup advantage in the passing game, then there's the question, can you take advantage of the matchup advantage?
Yeah, and you're right. That secondary is better than
you gave it credit for.
Absolutely.
First. Treated them like an opposing pitcher. You poo-pooed them. You know what that means?
True.
They're going to have three picks. I'm making the prediction. They will have three interceptions because you poo-pooed them.
Three interceptions? Does that mean we're going to see Drake May?
I don't hate that.
After pick number three, there's going to be people calling for it out there at Gillette, I'll tell you that. Depending on what point in the game it is.
As they should be.
Well,
Jacoby Brissett is supposed to be the professional, and we all love him and all that. If he throws three picks against the Seahawks, then they should be chanting, "We want May. We want May."
I think you might hear that if there are three interceptions, for sure.
And you just jinxed them because you poo-pooed the secondary.
That's true, I did. The secondary is better than I was giving them credit for. They're not great. I don't think there's some amazing secondary or anything. But
and it'll be interesting. They have a new defensive coach. How does that go?
Right.
They're going to be playing a different style than from Pete Carroll and what they did for years. So we'll see. Give them a chance. You're very negative.
I know I am. Let's go to Martin in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Martin.
Hey, fellas. I have a meaningful 9/11 story. They're related to the Red Bandana game in Boston College.
Wells Crowther, yes,
are you aware? Sure. So Wells Crowther was the man's name. He was a financial analyst up on the one of the towers, and he had played lacrosse at BC. Well, my mom was his high school science teacher down in Nyack, New York, and she always kept in touch with her best students, and so they had exchanged Christmas cards for years. And she told him, "You're going to do something great one day." He was a volunteer fireman in Nyack, New York, while trading up in whatever that company was. And he wanted to quit because he wanted to go full time as a fireman. So his goal was to be with the boys, and he sure was that day. He was credited reliably with leading 13 people out of the tower, and was found with his bandana in a stairwell with the other firefighters. I just wanted everyone to know what that means when they see that bandana uniform this weekend.
Martin, that's a great story. Thanks for telling it, and thanks for telling it on the air here. Wells Crowther was a hero that day. Absolutely. There's a lot of heroes that day. He was certainly one of them. 9/11's a big deal for me. I lost a cousin that day. Who I still miss terribly. I mean, it's a long, long time ago. It's 23 years. It's, you know, it was his entire life. He was 23 when he died. So, I mean, it's one of those things that just never goes away, never stops hurting. And for anyone affected by it, they know what I'm talking about. And there's just a lot of people who were, you know, in their 20s that just weren't even alive when it happened. It's weird to think about.
Well, Gerard Mayo, when he started his press conference, talked about addressing the team today, and he mentioned there are some players now on the roster that either weren't alive or were so young they really had no awareness. Drake May, I think, wasn't alive.
Yeah, no, I think
he's 22.
Was. Yeah.
So that puts it was a long time ago, but in a way, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
No, it really doesn't. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we return, we'll be joined by the great Adam Schefter of ESPN. That's next. WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcand, Andy Hart. We're live at Fenway Park right now, and joining us here on the hotline is the great Adam Schefter of ESPN. Mr. Schefter, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Christian, Andy, what's going on? Congratulations on week one. That was fun for the Patriots.
It certainly was. Now, I want to start with the national conversation, which I feel like your station obviously has a big hand in, and it seems like it's split mostly with people talking about what a bad loss it was for the Cincinnati Bengals. Did you find that game to be more a reflection of the Bengals losing it or the Patriots winning it?
Both. I don't think that happens, a game like that, without both teams earning the final result. And it's a situation where the Patriots made plays when they had to, and also the Bengals didn't. And the Bengals had a lot of issues to overcome from the summer, and they didn't get it done. But that doesn't detract from what New England did that day. New England went in there and played as well as they could play. So they earned the victory, and now they get to come home and have their home opener against the Seahawks. Makes it a little bit more interesting, a little more exciting. But, yeah, they earned it, and Cincinnati didn't come through and had opportunities that they didn't capitalize on.
How important do you think that win was for Gerard Mayo and this team? I mean, there were predictions of 1-2 wins for this team all year. Maybe they'll have the number one overall pick to just avoid that slow start. And who knows where the season goes, but to get a win out of the way on opening day, how important do you think that can be?
Well, that always helps. But it's a long season, you know, 17 games, and they're going to be ups and downs. And it's certainly nice to start with the up rather than a down. Because this team will encounter some tough stretches here. They're not far enough along to think that that sort of thing is going to happen every week. But that's the way you want to start it out. It worked out for them great, and now they get to go on.
Outside of the Patriots, who impressed you the most week one, Adam?
The Chiefs look better than they did in their Super Bowl year. So to me, you have to start there. Like, as good and as dominant as they've been, it's been two straight years. They looked impressive. Really impressive, like going to be a threat all year long. And so it's a situation where they were very, very strong and tough week one. They look like they're going to be poised for a huge year. And they stood out to me in a positive way.
How about San Francisco? Obviously, they had a really nice win. I was reading some things, and we've talked a little bit about it. I guess the local beat writers have talked about this idea that maybe the organization and ownership are getting a little impatient with all the money being spent and they haven't gotten over the hump there. Is there any pressure building on John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan out there?
Pressure building? That's news to me. I mean, you know, they've been in the Super Bowl a couple of times. They steamrolled the Jets on Monday night. They both signed the contract extensions. I think there's pressure on everybody in this league to win all the time. And when you don't, there are going to be questions that are asked and raised. That's par for the course. With some franchises, you could see it coming long before it starts happening. I don't see the pressure today on them, but could that change? Could their season go the other way and all of a sudden people are calling? Yeah, with any team just about. But those guys look pretty locked into me.
Schefter, your colleague Don Van Natta had a very long piece today on ESPN.com about Robert Kraft and him wanting to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Let's start with, do you believe Robert Kraft should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
It's not even a question. It's ridiculous that he's not. To me, it's absurd. Considering all that he's done for that franchise, for that area, for the league, he is not even borderline Hall of Fame. He is 100% Hall of Famer. And the fact that he's not in, it always pisses me off that these things are drawn out longer than they should be. What are we talking about? Like this year, I remember when I was a voter and I was campaigning or arguing on behalf of Randy Gradishar, the former Broncos linebacker, and he didn't get in. And the years went by and he got a lot older. And lo and behold, Randy Gradishar got in this year. I don't know. What did I miss in the 20 years that he didn't get in? Did something happen? Did he all of a sudden become a Hall of Famer from the time that I was arguing his case to now? To me, it's absurd. And people are made to wait way longer than they should. And they don't get to enjoy it as long as they should. Ken Stabler gets into the Hall of Fame after he's lost his life. That's all of a sudden he became a Hall of Famer? He was a Hall of Famer all along. Robert Kraft is a Hall of Famer. Today, tomorrow, yesterday. But let's make him wait. Let's make him wait. Let's draw it out longer than we should. Let's make it more complicated and involved than we should. Are you kidding me? You're talking about one of the most successful franchises in the history of sports, maybe the most, during that stretch. He's the owner of the team. And he's not in the Hall of Fame? Like, why? Why isn't he in?
So can you answer that question? You have a lot of experience, and I know there's obviously sort of a implication in the story on ESPN.com right now that maybe the promotional campaign put forth by the Patriots and Stacey James has actually hurt his candidacy. But do you have a guess as to why he continues to not get in?
I don't know anything about that. All I'll say is that it's a highly politicized process with people having a lot of power over these situations. And I'm sure there are certain voters, for whatever reason, that don't approve of him being in the Hall of Fame, because there's no plausible, logical reason why Robert Kraft isn't already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
A couple of the things that got mentioned were Spygate, you know, scandals, things like that. And of course, as Andy just mentioned, that's what the voters say. I mean, you have some kind of line into these people, right?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. Is that going to be used against Tom Brady when he's up for the Hall of Fame? Is that going to be used against Bill Belichick when he's in the Hall of Fame? Is Ty Law in the Hall of Fame? Is Willie McGinnis going to, like, these? What are we talking about? Like, it's all part of the history. I don't care that he lobbied allegedly for the who cares? Everybody lobbies. Everybody lobbies. Randy Gradishar used to call me back in the day, you know, asking, you know, for help and how he could get in. Is that any different? This may be at a higher level if that's what occurred. Like, what are we talking about? To me, again, you're getting me worked up over a process where these voters, again, hold the power to decide when somebody gains entry. When? Let me say something. Robert Kraft is going to get into Pro Football Hall of Fame, okay? I don't know whether it's going to be this year, next year, in a decade. What are we doing? What are we doing? Put him in. He belongs. That's where he should be. It's ridiculous that he's not. There's no reason for him not to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I got to tell you, Chef, I've never heard you like this before on any topic.
Well, there are certain things that push my buttons. And voters having control over people's lives like that, I don't like that.
Fair enough. All right, Patriots and the Seahawks, two teams that had a really easy time running the ball, it seemed like. Two teams with strong defenses, two teams with rookie head coaches. How do you see that matchup playing out this weekend?
I think Seattle's a pretty tough team, and we know that New England's going to be tougher than people thought under Gerard Mayo. Now, again, they still have holes, weaknesses, talent deficiencies. I got it. I think Seattle will travel well, be a tough game. I think Seattle's better than people think. We'll see how it goes on Sunday. I just think that's a tough Seattle team that'll be better. New England wins this game, gets 2-0. Wow, that'd be interesting. Like, nobody would have had that on the bingo card for sure.
Adam, then, obviously,
if they get to 2-0, I just thought of this. That might be one more argument for Robert Kraft to belong in the Pro Football Hall.
we were just talking about that. Yeah.
Adam, obviously, a big story this week was Tyreek Hill and everything that went down in Miami with the police there. Where do you see that going? Is that going to kind of quietly go away? Is the league involved? Is this going to create something moving forward in terms of social justice? And we've sort of seen this in the past with players here, with Devin McCourtian. How does that play out in Miami?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think, you know, the league did get a little bit involved in the past before on issues like this. I think everybody's watching the league and expecting the league to kind of lead the way. And I could be wrong, but I don't think we've heard anything from the league so far on this particular issue. I do think the league, you know, will eventually say something. But, you know, you want to think that when you see something as disturbing as that, that there'll be some good that comes out of it. And if the National Football League can help lead the way in that area, then that would be great. I do believe Robert Kraft has been involved in many causes before too. Like that mm-hmm. would be, maybe that would enhance his Pro Football Hall of Fame credentials too.
Hey, why not? Use all the help he can get. Adam Schefter, thanks so much. You should be campaigning for him, by the way. Instead, forget Stacey James. You should be there campaigning for him. That was great today. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. I'll talk next Wednesday.
All right, Adam Schefter, he joins us every Wednesday here at 3:45 on WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, quick break. When we come back, we will reset on the story of the day, and that is Robert Kraft's story that Adam Schefter is very passionate about. We'll get to all that, and we'll give you a recap on it next.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.